May it please the Court, I am Craig Smay. I represent Ashley Creek Properties in this matter, which, as Your Honor has indicated, is a related matter to the earlier arguments heard here today. The first of these appeals involves the standing of Ashley Creek to have raised a related claim. The District Court appears to have conceded that Ashley Creek had standing, except for an imminence requirement, which it took to have been very recently imposed by the Supreme Court's ruling in Summers v. Earth Island Institute. The matter is of some importance because, with respect to the claim raised by Ashley Creek, there appears to be no defense except standing. It's plain that the agency here simply refused to consider what is on its face a facially reasonable alternative source of supply to the one which has been discussed here today, the Smoky Canyon Mine, and failed adequately to consider the alternative of other Idaho phosphate reserves. In that respect, it's important to remember, Your Honors, that the purpose of the project here is to continue a supply of phosphate ore to the Pocatello fertilizer plant run by Simplot Company. The case, therefore, at least with respect to standing, raises a procedural injury, which is refusal to consider an alternative source of supply, a very large phosphate reserve near Vernal, Utah, part of which is presently controlled by Simplot and used by them to supply their other fertilizer plant, part of which our state of Utah lease is controlled by Ashley Creek Phosphates.
Well, you still have to get over Summers. How do you do that?
Excuse me?
You still have to get over Summers. How do you do that?
It's not difficult to get over Summers at all, it seems to me, if Your Honors wish that issue addressed first. Summers, if Your Honors will notice, is a case involving general regulations in which the project had been taken off the table, to use the Supreme Court's phrase. The court said you need to address the applicability of the regulations to the property in which you claim an interest, first of all, and then you need to show that you will soon visit that property. The statement in Summers is the claim is, quote, not tied to application of the challenged regulations, because it did not identify any particular site and because it related to past injury rather than imminent future injury. This court has rendered a similar ruling recently in Ecology Center, Inc. versus Tidwell, which says plaintiffs lack standing because they had not identified an application of the Forest Service regulations that threatens their interest with imminent harm. Well, this case is not a case of regulations, general regulations. It is a case of a specific permit for a specific project.
The point of Summers is that procedural injury isn't enough. And that's what you're essentially claiming in this case, right?
Yes, and that can be addressed quickly as well. But I would simply point out that there's no need in this case to address applicability of regulations because you're not dealing with regulations. And furthermore, there's no need to show that you'll visit the property soon. It's conceded that they own an adjoining property. It has always been the rule in this circuit that ownership of geographically proximate land creates a presumption that you will suffer environmental injury. You don't have to visit the land, you simply have to own it, and it's conceded in this case that Ashley Creek owns mining rights in land, one of which is actually part of the Smoky Canyon complex. But they also own leases in Utah. So it seems to me that the two requirements that exist in Summers simply don't apply in this case. Summers doesn't apply to this case. Summers doesn't change the usual rule that in procedural injury cases, the standards of imminence and redressability are substantially relaxed. You you don't need to show that the alternative you propose would have been chosen, nor do you have to show that the harm would have resulted in a short time or any time. The standing rule is that a procedural injury suffices so long as the procedures in question are designed to protect some threatened concrete interest. That's the ultimate basis of standing. There must be a concrete interest threatened by failure of the procedure. The procedural failure in this case is the failure to provide a EIS. That is governed, the what is required of a complete EIS is set out in 42 U.S.C. Section 4332.2c. It includes, of course, one, environmental impacts, and two, unavoidable adverse environmental effects, but it also includes, three, a consideration of alternatives, including alternative sources of supply, and four, the relationship between short-term uses and long-term productivity, and five, commitments of resources. The failure here includes not only failure to consider environmental impacts, such as were discussed before Your Honor this morning, but the failure to consider alternative sources of supply that would promote long-term productivity and would avoid the commitment of what I would call dirty resources, Idaho phosphate reserves polluted with selenium, in preference to clean ones, Utah reserves, which don't have a selenium problem. The concrete interest alleged by Ashley Creek is ownership of the alternative supplies. And given the scarcity of phosphate and the cost of transporting it, really the only practical alternatives for this particular phosphate fertilizer plant are the Vernal reserves, which are already supplying Simplot's Rock Springs plant, or other phosphate reserves in Idaho.
Counsel, can you explain to me why Utah doesn't have a selenium problem?
Well, it's a natural constituency of the ore in Idaho, which doesn't occur in Utah. Mm-hmm. It simply isn't there. For example, you never hear of the Simplot mine in Utah producing selenium problems in Utah, and it's the same reserve. I mean, their reserves is as close to Ashley reserves as you are to me. You simply drive your bulldozer across the invisible boundary and start mining in Utah. Otherwise, there's a mine in place, there are beneficiating plants in place, and there is a common carrier pipeline in place to get it to Rock Springs and then by rail to Pocatello. The threatened injury to Ashley Creek is not merely the environmental one, the usual ones, that occur to anyone owning land in the locale. It's also deferral of development of clean reserves in preference for dirty reserves, to put it in a fairly gross phraseology. I don't think in this case that the first of those injuries can even be argued. There's no question that Ashley Creek owns mining rights, part of the Smoky Canyon complex. They are geographically proximate. And under the Kootenai Tribe case, the Douglas County case, and indeed the Ashley Creek v. Norton case, previously rendered by this court, that fact alone creates a presumption that Ashley is subject to the environmental harms. But further, it's the commitment of dirty resources is an injury not only because it defers earning royalties on the clean reserves.
The royalties go to your parent company, right?
Excuse me?
Don't the royalties go to the parent company?
The parent company is Ashley Creek Properties.
Right.
Right. It not only defers
the royalties. Not the company that's seeking relief here.
Yes, it is. Same company. There's no difference between the two of them. It not only defers royalties, but it wastes the costs of developing the alternative reserves. What is the point of going out and spending the very substantial costs of finding clean reserves, developing clean reserves, and in this case, obtaining their access to common carrier transportation, if you are simply going to allow dirty reserves to be used in preference?
Mr. Smith, your time has expired. Do you want to conclude with your thought?
Fine. Those, it seems to me, are economic injuries, but under the laws of this circuit, Port of Astoria case, the Ranchers Cattlemen's Association case, those are not disqualifiers where they're clearly connected to the basic purposes of the Act. Finally, the court determined that Ashley Creek could not claim joint standing with Greater Yellowstone on the basis that the cases had not been consolidated. They could easily have been consolidated. Judge Windmill thought that that would not cure the problem, but there are at least two Supreme Court cases which find that it does. One is Horn versus Flores, rendered last year, and the other is Secretary of the Interior versus California, in which cases which can be consolidated, the standing of one plaintiff will suffice for standing for the others.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, counsel was just addressing 09357274, so I assume that you'd like me to respond to that. Okay, so this is the standing case, the third case. Again, I'm Justin Pitto. Nice to be speaking with you once again. I think that you know, the fundamental issue here is that the interest that Ashley Creek is asserting is really a procedural interest, and Summers is a procedural interest. It's a they allege a procedural injury. At times in their brief, they concede that they're alleging a procedural injury. Their sort of first cut argument is that's fine. Summers doesn't apply. Mr. Snay made that argument again today. Summers applies to all procedural injury cases, and as a case this court decided recently that Ashley Creek submitted a 28-J letter on yesterday, Wilderness Society versus Ray, applied Summers in a very similar circumstance where there was a concrete project, and the court said you need to show that you have an imminent injury from the from this project. In that case, it was a timber project or something of that sort, and one of the affiants said, well, I've used this area in the past, but because the affiant didn't make allegations that they had sort of a foreseeable and predict, you know, they had a concrete plan to return, that was viewed as not being enough. I'd also like to submit that the government has never conceded that Ashley Creek owns adjoining property, which is what I think Mr. Smay just suggested. At most, Ashley Creek owns royalty and possibly a reversionary interest in a phosphate lease, which is considerably different than the kind of fee ownership that typically gives rise to standing if you have a geographically proximate property. If you live next to a project, I think it is a reasonable assumption that you're going to be affected by whatever environmental consequences occur at that adjoining project. When you own a royalty interest in a phosphate lease, it's not clear in that same way that any sort of environmental harm related to the Smoky Canyon mine expansion would flow to your interest. It's sheer speculation that somehow a future mining plan on these adjacent leases, which may or may not be owned by Ashley Creek's parent, is going to be interfered with because of any sort of problem at the Smoky Canyon mine.
Do you know who has the who holds the fee ownership?
Well, the United States owns the fee ownership of the property. This is all these leases are on.
Yeah, but I should have phrased it differently. Is there a significant lease interest that's held by someone other than the government?
The government with phosphate leases generally under the under the congressional law, the government uses a competitive bidding process for phosphate reserves, and so there are a number of leases all over the Caribou National Forest and a number of different known phosphate areas that are owned by a variety of companies. Simplot owns some of them. There's a declaration in the record from BLM which identifies the owner as recorded in the BLM office of all of the leases that Ashley Creek has identified. I don't remember the name of the company offhand. In the district court, after judgment had been entered, Ashley Creek submitted an additional letter between Ashley Creek and another company which does not currently own any leases, any of the leases, from, I think, 1970, which purported to transfer some unidentified leases in the area. Nowhere in the letter are the leases identified. And Ashley Creek retained a reversionary and a royalty interest. There's no record of that with BLM. We don't know which leases those were about. We know that they were in the Caribou National Forest. It says so in the letter. But the and moreover, this was all post-judgment, as was as part of a motion for reconsideration that Ashley Creek had filed. And moreover, as I submitted to the court, Ashley Creek doesn't suggest that there's any concrete plan to mine those leases by a company that owns them, which is not Ashley Creek. Furthermore, as an alternate ground of affirmance, I think the prudential standing issue is one that this court has decided in the past, and I would submit is dispositive here as well. I'm happy to answer any further questions.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Well, I'm happy to stand in our briefs. Thank
you. All right. Do you want to argue on this one, or do you want to save your fire for the next one? All right. So now let's – I actually called the other case first, but that's all right. Everybody understands what we're talking about. So why don't you argue your second case then, Mr. Smay?
If Your Honor, please. The other is quick and easy to argue, and there are some important points of rebuttal, if I may use part of that time to raise those at the appropriate time.
Well, not unless you want the government to stand up again.
If the government wishes to stand up again –
Go ahead.
Fine. With respect to intervention in this case, the grounds on which intervention was disallowed are said to have been delay and untimeliness, and that the interests which would be asserted are speculative, that undue speculation would thereafter occur. It has frequently been said in these cases that time would be wasted speculating about the viability of the, for example, the Vernal alternative. In point of fact, because no EIS was done on that alternative, no speculation is even permissible. You need to have a record on which to base any sort of speculation of that kind. It's the rule in this circuit, for example, that on the issue of standing, you cannot require the party asserting standing to perform an EIS for behalf of the government, that merely confuses the standing issue with the merits. That's the rule in Kootenai Tribe, for example. And that, it seems to me, is what is attempted to be done here. Somehow Ashley is supposed to supply at this point what should have been supplied by the government itself in addressing the Ashley Creek alternative. But furthermore, the fact that the government did not provide that kind of consideration in the EIS renders the EIS void on its face, inadequate on its face. That is a matter which can be considered without delay of any kind. And it is a matter which goes in many ways directly to the issue which was raised by Greater Yellowstone Company in the injunctive proceedings in this case. If, in point of fact, the EIS is inadequate on its face, then there's no harm that can be shown to Simplot in sending the thing back to have the EIS performed properly. In fact, you can't even prove that the purpose for which the project is put forward is a valid purpose. Why do you need to develop Smoky Canyon if you can get all the phosphates you need cleaner and cheaper at Vernal, Utah by simply driving your bulldozers across the boundary and extending your mine onto the rest of that reserve? Uh, the problem was attempted to be surmounted in this case by supplying an affidavit of a Mr. Hunt. We objected to it not only because it states no basis, but because it now speculates about what is not in the administrative record in this case. And that was put forward supposedly to counteract a statement of Greater Yellowstone, which is made again in the briefs they've submitted here today, that the Ashley reserves are sitting there, they're ready to be used at any time, and that that ought to be the appropriate resolution in this matter. It isn't required on behalf of Greater Yellowstone or on behalf of Ashley Creek to show that those reserves are ready in any particular way. What is required to be shown is that the agency simply did not appropriately consider them, did not eliminate them as the proper solution in this case. And that's what ought to have been done, so that the denial of intervention in this case, in, it seems to me, straightforward violation of the rule regarding intervention, on the basis that there would be delay if, in fact, the intervention had been permitted, is false on its face. It doesn't take any time at all to observe that the EIS in this case refuses to consider those alternatives. Furthermore, that the granting the intervention would have invited speculation is not appropriate either, because speculation is not permitted in the absence of a record. The speculation ought to have occurred in the EIS itself. Obviously, the interests of Ashley Creek were implicated by the decision not to allow them to intervene and not to allow them to present any of this material as amicus earlier, although this court permitted an amicus filing. Here, the issue whether or not there is a ready alternative source wholly unconsidered is central to the issues here. If I may then just briefly, and it will take a very brief time, to comment about on Mr. Pideau's argument, I sent a letter to the clerk calling the Ray case to the attention of the court because it's entirely consistent with my argument. Ray is a case about general regulations, and it applies the rule of Summers. Where you have general regulations, you must show A, applicability first, and B, intent to visit second. It does not apply that rule where you're not dealing with regulations, where you're dealing with a specific permit of a specific project. Furthermore, the claim that somehow Ashley's interest is not ownership is belied by the simple definition of a mineral lease.
Well, where's the lease in the record?
Where
in the record do we find the evidence of your company's interest in the lease?
There is an affidavit reciting what leases they hold, entirely uncontested, and showing their locations.
We don't have the leases themselves, right?
Excuse me?
We don't have the leases themselves?
The reference to the lease number will easily produce the reference by pulling up the public record. But a federal...
I know, but we don't have the public record in front of us, so we don't know. We just have whatever's in the affidavit.
The reciting...
And is it the leasehold interest that your company owns, or just a reversionary interest?
Well, they have both. But your Honor must understand what the leasehold interest is. Under a federal mineral lease, you have the right to take the minerals and sell them. It is an ownership interest in the minerals, which obviously are part of
the... And so what's your best case? Is an ownership in a mineral lease is sufficient to give you standing to challenge an EIS on adjacent property?
Try the Puerto Astoria case, the Douglas County case, the Cattleman's case. Look at, excuse me, I tried case, look at the earlier Ashley Creek versus Norton case. All of those recite that an ownership interest in...
As a general matter.
Well, whether it's a general matter or a specific matter, the rule they create is that ownership of an interest in land nearby creates a presumption of environmental harm.
Down to about a minute.
The fact that the BLM record in this case was incomplete to show Ashley's interests is simply a fault of the BLM. The interests exist. They were proffered to the court, and the court accepted them. And the fact that Ashley Creek has changed its name over time as the interests have been devolved upon successor companies is of no importance whatever, it seems to me. The present leaseholds are owned by the present plaintiff, and they make the present claims.
Okay. Mr. Barker.
Thank you, Your Honor. Albert Barker on behalf of the J.R. Simplot Company. I'll try to make up some of the extra time I took. I just have a few points that I would like to make. Number one, I think it's important for the court to read the Tenth Circuit opinion and the Ashley
Creek. Will you speak up a little louder, please?
Sorry, Your Honor. I think it's important for the court to read the Tenth Circuit opinion and the Ashley Creek Chevron case, which involved the pipeline from Vernal to Rock Springs. And you'll read in there that the Ashley Creek properties and Ashley Creek Phosphate or whatever they had been over the years, essentially a speculator in mineral leases, that they've never run a mine. They have no employees. The company was operated out of the home of Mr. Archer. It needed money to get this mine up and running that it didn't have. And in fact, the Tenth Circuit recognized that Ashley Creek was in the business of litigating, not in the business of developing mines. So it's a little difficult to understand how Ashley Creek has a mine that, as GYC attempted to argue, stands ready to supply Simplot. The facts don't support that claim. That claim was asserted in the context of whether or not what harm would ensue from an injunction. It wasn't asserted by GYC, and you didn't hear Mr. Presso or see in any of his briefs saying that the EIS was defective on that ground. So
let's kind of turn to a different subject. The government is required to consider alternatives. What alternatives were considered in respect to this expansion?
Well, Your Honor, there were, I think, alternatives A through D with subparts of each one, and then, of course, the no-action alternative, which would include not mining at all. And so the no-action alternative was, in essence, what if we don't allow Simplot to do this?
Was that the only alternative considered?
No, Your Honor. The alternatives had to do with the extent to which certain parts of the property would be mined and would not be mined, how they would be.
But it was all in the context of the existing mine and its possible expansion.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor. That's
except
correct.
For the no-action alternative.
There was a no-action yeah. alternative. That's what I was trying to say. Yes.
Well, I don't know which case you're arguing.
I'm trying to respond on the yeah. intervention case in Judge Williams'
on the intervention.
GYC case. And, yeah. and Your Honor, the point I was trying to make there, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, but as I understand the issue on the primary issue in intervention cases is timeliness, isn't it?
Your Honor, exactly. In this case, this court directed the district court to go back and expedite the hearing on the merits of the case. And the court did so and set a schedule. And Mr. Smay's local counsel in Idaho, Mr. Wood, is on the court's docket notice that he got that information of what the schedule would be. And that schedule required all briefing in the entire case to be done by the end of June. And now, 3 weeks later, 2.5 weeks later, Ashley Creek, after having been involved in this case on appeal, decides that they want to try and intervene. And the judge said, that's untimely. And that was a correct decision, given that, the expedited
at that
nature.
Point, what had happened after remand? Had the motion schedule already been set?
That's what I was explaining. The motion schedule and the briefing schedule after remand required all briefs to be completed by the end of June. And it wasn't until the middle of July, which was, let's see, a week, I think, or 10 days before argument was scheduled, and the judge, Judge Williams, had committed already to issue a decision by August the 4th, which he did meet.
The motion was already fully briefed.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. But the other point I wanted to make in terms of what, if Ashley Creek is trying to argue the merits of an issue that was not brought into the case by GYC, it is an intervener has to take the case as it finds it. And you can't expand the case and create a whole separate issue that was not before the parties. And that's what Ashley Creek tried to do by arguing the merits of whether or not the FEIS was adequate on those grounds. And the issue came up in the GYC context only on as to whether or not there was going to be harm. And that's why we submitted the response to that argument that Ashley Creek stands ready. That's why we submitted the third Hunt declaration explaining the difficulties in trying to get any ore from Rock Springs, Wyoming to Pocatello, including the substantial environmental effects to Pocatello of having to deal with this dry ore as opposed to ore in a pipeline.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm happy to answer any questions, but if the court doesn't have any questions, we're happy to stand in our briefs.
All right, very good. The case just argued will be submitted for decision.